You are listening to Sustain Now. In this podcast, you will learn from successful entrepreneurs and scientists about the newest climate change solutions to address the climate crisis. From food and agritech, over energy, material innovation, to circular economy. This nonprofit podcast is hosted by Frederica. She is a tech entrepreneur and climate enthusiast. You can find show notes and background information on www.sustainnow.ch. Enjoy the show.
In today's episode, I'm speaking with Dana Yardin, co-founder of BioBetter. Their vision is to solve one of the biggest bottlenecks in advancing cultivated meat to mass production. They have invented a new way of creating growth factors cheaper and faster for the cultivated meat industry. BioBetter harnessed the inherent advantages of tobacco plants, turning them into natural bioreactors. They grow in open fields using renewable energy as a sustainable source for animal-free growth factors and other proteins. Founded in 2012 and incorporated in 2015, the company pivoted from products for pharma industry to producing growth factors for the cultivated meat industry. They employ 40 people, raise $16 million so far, and are based in Israel. I had a really enjoyable conversation with Dana, not only about the future of food tech, but also how empathy and love can bring us more together on a journey to solve the climate crisis. Thank you so much for joining my podcast, Sustain Now.
Thank you so much for having me.
We just had a little bit of recording problem. Sometimes as well funny for the listeners, like, you know, you start and have a great conversation and then you realize you haven't hit the record button. Yeah. It's so typical. But I'm very excited to have you on my show, and we will talk a lot about the future of food and as well what needs to be done to get cultivated meat off the ground. And it would be really great if you can just introduce yourself. As a little challenge, it would be great if you can, you know, introduce yourself like you would be at a party where no one understands biotech or food tech. So it would be great if you can just in a few sentences who you are.
Sure. So it's basically very easy for me. I'm working in the biotech industry for almost 2 decades. I studied medicine. I was sure that I'm going to be a psychiatrist, but at the end of the process, I decided not to practice, and I studied also an MBA, and I fell in love with all the business development activities in the area of biotechnology. I worked many years for the pharma drug development industry. To be honest, I just encountered the food tech just recently, 3 years ago, while working on my startup called BioBetter. We were approached by a cultivated meat company asking us if we can use our platform for what they need in their process. So now I'll explain a little bit what it means. So Professor Odette Joseov is my co-founder on the scientific part. He's a renowned professor in all that related to genetic engineering and molecular biology. And for many years, he is working on molecular farming. What it means, molecular farming, is that in order to produce proteins, you can use different vectors. Some use bacteria, some use yeast, some use mammalian cells. Professor Joseov decided to use plants, and specifically tobacco plants. We worked together on a company with other company Odette founded called Colplant, which produces collagen in tobacco plants. And then we decided to do all the other proteins in our company. So we founded BioBetter together with our first investor. He's coming from the tobacco field, really wanted to do something with the tobacco, called David Sur. He was pushing us towards doing something good with the tobacco. For the first few years, 2017 to 2020, we produced an antibody, a drug. But during the COVID, we had encountered some, you know, issues with raising money. And then, as I said, the cultivated meat company came to us and asked us. So what we are basically doing, if I'll try to make it as simple as possible, we are using an organism that is able to produce proteins such as ourselves. We are engineering the genetics in a way that will make the organism specifically produce our protein. We are doing it in tobacco plants. So if we want, for example, to make insulin, which is very important in the cultivated meat arena, we introduce to the genome of the plant the insulin gene, and then we grow the plant, and the plant grow the insulin for us. After we harvest it, now the challenge is to extract the insulin from the other proteins that are being naturally produced in the tobacco plant. And then we are using our own patented way to extract this protein.
If I understood it correctly, you kind of take the seed of tobacco and there, you know, you genetically modify the DNA of that seed where you say, you know, please produce insulin. And then you plant it, it grows, like it really grows like a normal tobacco plant. And then you harvest, so you cut it, and then, you know, you extract it with a certain way where you can extract that insulin back.
Right, exactly. Good. We use it as a small bioreactor or a small like factory to produce our protein. And what's beautiful about our method in general, the method of using, it's called constitutive growing of the plants, it means that you can grow it in the ground. So it only require air, sun, and water, and then you grow it. So it's very easy. You don't need very sophisticated, for this part of it, you don't need sophisticated bioreactors, machineries, or, you know, a lot of infrastructure in order to do it. So it's very, very easy, relatively easy. Mm. So I personally admire molecular farming. I admire using plants to produce other proteins for us. Humans and plants are very similar in many ways. Plants can make very complicated proteins as opposed to yeast or bacteria that are less capable in doing so. So this is why I also really, really like this kind of...
Super interesting. I actually had on my podcast someone here from Switzerland who's using cannabis plant to create proteins. So it's very interesting to learn more about what actually you can do. And I really like that word, as you said, like using the plant as kind of a bioreactor. I can also imagine that tobacco is a very fast growing plant. So you probably don't need like a lot of, is it 1, 2, 3 months after you can harvest it?
Tobacco, it's a very, very interesting, it has a lot of advantages. It's a very interesting plant. So yes, you are correct 100% because it has up to 4 cycles a year. It grows very fast. It's not very spoiled. And you're able to do even 1 or 2 cycles within the same period of time. So you cut it and it continue growing and then you cut it again. The biomass is very big. All the biomass is accumulated in the leaves themselves. So you contain a lot of biomass for the protein, as opposed to other technologies that they use it, the seeds to do it. The fact that it's not a feed and food crop in our case is very advantageous in terms of it's very bitter. So there's no real risk that an animal or a human will consume it. So it's also an advantage. So tobacco, it's a very nice, you use it for the good things. It can be a very good plant. Yeah, we know now that the tobacco contains a lot of good proteins, even more than soy, if you take out the nicotine part of it. If you take out the alkaloid molecules that part of them are the nicotine, you have a very good feed protein and plant. And this is something that we are going also to explore in a company, what to do with the side stream. So we want to take out the nicotine and use the side stream of the tobacco to feed the cells because it fills with amino acid and minerals. So it can also be used as a media for the cell.
Let's exactly like dive there a little bit into it. Probably most of my listeners won't really. They all heard about cultivated meat, but probably none of them really, including me, totally understand the whole process. So I don't know how far you can actually explain that to us is, you know, how do you grow is exactly what you said, your cell mass. You know, of course, you take something from a cow, you take a cell and you try to grow it. And, you know, you try to grow a certain mass in a certain scale to actually make a burger or whatever out of it in the end. But as you described at the beginning, you need a lot of extras, like you said, insulin. Is there, what else do you need to create that?
Yeah, so I'll explain. Basically, what you're doing, you're taking the cells, as you said, there are different possibilities for the origin of the cells. So let's keep it aside. But you take the cells and you practically need to grow them outside of the body. You need to nurture them as if they were in the body and to give them the right conditions. So of course, it's a matter of temperature and you know, and in humidity and everything. But a part of that, you need to bring the basic, you know, like sugar, amino acids, vitamins, minerals, etc. But the complicated issue is that these cells, they need like managers. They need someone to tell them now proliferate, now differentiate, now they need to have some kind of control. And usually in the body, it's called growth factors or serums, hormones, or others that are being produced and managing what's going on with the cells to make it a whole organ or to make it
a steak.
Yeah.
a muscle structure.
I needed the word tissue. You need to make it a whole tissue. You know, you have the cells and then you make it tissue. So then you need these growth factors. And this is a complicated proteins that being used today mainly for pharma or for R&D research. And most of them are very pure and are GMP. So the cost is very, very high. And also the availability is very low. Because if you wanted to do it for, you know, some experiments, you need small amount of it. But if you want to produce tons of meat, you need tons of tons of growth factors. And this is exactly where we get in. So the basic is the media. It's all the amino acids, the vitamins, the other goodies that are needed for the cells, the temperature, the humidity, all that. And on top of that, all these complicated, like say, growth factors that are needed. And of course, the machinery that you need, the shear force that you need. If you're using a 3D printer, every cultivated meat company and their own process.
Okay, super interesting. And so you're creating these growth factors. Is it just one? Is it two, three?
The GFI published few that are very important. We picked for now four that we are concentrating on, but we will expand our pipeline moving forward. For now, we are basically concentrated with FGF, transferring, and insulin, and also TGF-beta. And this is the most, I think, important growth factors that are needed.
Do you also need like an FDA approval if that gets used for cultivated meat, etc.?
So it's very complicated. We need to explore it right now, mainly with the recent advancement of Upside Food and Good Meat that received GRAS and U.S. approval. USDA, I'm sorry, approval. We explore that right now, but I have to say that basically it's the same. We need to make sure that we prove that our growth factors are safe to be used in food. So there are basic parameters that we need to make sure that we keep. For example, we are now finalizing the establishment of a food grade production plant. It means that all the materials and everything is built. According to ISO 22000. And then we will have a set of specification that we will work according to it and we'll release the batches of the growth factor. According to it, we will make sure that the amount of nicotine and anabasin, as I mentioned before, are very low, that there are no endotoxin, no, the sterility is there. So we are working. We don't know exactly if it will be a GRAS submission, which is something that you do with the FDA, or it will be another format. But we will make sure that our clients will get the food grade growth factors that they need for their process.
Maybe that's a good thing to first start as well into your, like your company. How far are you? Like, are you already have the products on the market? Can a cultivated meat company already buy it? Or are you still, you know, in the research phase? So where are you right now? Are you market ready already? Like just to get an understanding how big you are and where you're standing in that scaling up phase.
So we are scaling up. Exactly now, going from lab scale or small scale to a large scale with our new facility, which I hope we can announce in September this year. We need to accomplish several tasks, but we hope to start sell our first in line, which is the FGF2, at the beginning of 2024. Until then, we made a lot of progress in terms of agriculture. We already planted more than 5 dunams of FGF. In different locations.
Five?
Dunams. I don't know how do you, hectares, you say hectares in...
Hectares, yeah, yeah, hectares.
So
yeah,
in our, it's a, I don't know how to make the exact translation.
Yeah.
But it's 1,000 1,000, I think one dunam is 1,000 meter, square meter. So we planted several areas, and I can share with you later on some photos. We are growing and expanding this part.
Do you plant inside or outside? So is it...
So in Israel, you can do it for experimental use. You can do it in net houses, which are practically nets that, you know, protecting it from insects. It's practically open field. So it's not a greenhouse. It's not very complicated facility. This is what we're trying to do. We are trying to produce these growth factors as cheap as possible. So using farmers to grow it for us as an agriculture supply. And then we have a very simple, straightforward, patented purification method that is also cheap, and we're able to extract the proteins from it. So now we are in the phase that we are growing it in the ground in a way that we will do it in the future, and opening our facility, making sure that we are able to scale to a large machinery. We're scaling up to be able to process 100 kilograms of leaves a day. Again, I'm not sure you are using pounds, we are using kilograms.
We're using kilogram too.
Okay, so okay, that's good.
So I read somewhere that you want to offer that growth factors for, was it $1 per gram or something? And just to give a comparison, I'm not sure if I'm right, please correct me if I'm wrong. It's right now, it costs 50,000 usually?
So it depends.
Dollars per gram?
So depends.
Or what's the...
Yeah, so it depends. There are factors that cost also $1 million per gram, for example, TGF beta. And there are the insulin, which are the most abundant because they are, it's most needed and experienced and tested until now. So they have it like in $150 per gram. But in order to really be commercially viable for the insulin and transferrin for sure, you need to reduce it to even less than $1 per gram in order to be, for the cultivated meat companies to be commercial viable and relevant. So this is our aim. And this is where, this is where we believe that in our next scale, which means being able to process 25 tons of leaves a day, we will be able to reduce the cost of insulin transferring to this level. Maybe not at the first steps, but in this facility, we would be able to do that.
Just to give a feeling, like if it would be 25 tons per day, like do you need a lot of agricultural land for that? Or is there a way of making it more, as well, like sustainable in that sense?
It seems like because of the yield and because of, as we said, the tobacco is very, very fast, it seems not to be a challenge for Israel for this plant. So we don't anticipate that the agricultural land is going to suffer from this growth. We made some calculations and saw that it's even less than 1% of the arable land for 10% of the total meat market. If the cultivated meat will take 10% of the traditional meat market, there's still negligible percent of agro land. So
that's super interesting, especially like thinking about, as you said, like 10%, the cultivated meat takes 10% of the meat consumption in the future. I spoke to a lot of like people and like, you know, I was super excited with cultivated meat and I was like, yeah, this is, you know, this is going to be really revolutionized, which I still totally believe. But then when you speak to them, they're all saying, yeah, if we can reach like 3-4% of the meat consumption in 20 years, that's going to be good. And I'm like, wow, that's crazy.
I think that the most challenging issue was that they really needed cultivated meat companies. I thought about it a lot lately. They grew very fast and the expectations from them grew as well, very fast. But at the end of the day, to produce a piece of meat without the animal, think about it, it's very, very complicated. And they need to deal with so many things. It's not only the technology. It's technology. It's regulation. You know, when you want to make, for example, a cell therapy drug, which was not also very successful in the past 2 decades that it's been explored. But after you find a way to do it, the amount of material is not so big. And the road to the market is very clear because you have an FDA and then a big pharma buys you and they will do everything else. But when you look at cultivated meat, they need to explore a very complicated technology to find all the different solutions for it. It's a new regulatory pathway, which is better than pharma, but it's still never been done before. And then they need to scale up And then they need to gain, you know, consumer acceptance.
Trust.
And trust. And then they need to have all the logistics and to be very cost efficient. I think that you expect a lot from a startup company that started even 7 years ago, you know, 5 years ago. So I think that we need to maintain our expectations and to see what they gain. Sometimes, you know, when you look at a new technology, when you want to see and explore the forecast, you cannot really imagine what will be the changes that will make it accelerated or not. For example, I had a very interesting lecture about AI and what they thought when it will replace what. And every year they changed the forecast and make it earlier because things happened very, very fast. They needed to make sure that they have a regulatory acceptance. I think that they have a check on that. So they know what to do. Now they're going to tackle the scalability. And once all the resources will be invested there, and companies like ours, I'm not talking just about BioBetter, I'm talking about a lot of other players in the ecosystem, some of them on the equipment, some of them on the growth factors, not only us, we'll find the solution for them. We will accelerate together. And from these expectations of, yeah, maybe in 20 years, 3-4%, once we will be able to understand what to do and how to do it, and we will accelerate very, very fast. So I don't know, you know, I think that having those forecasts and estimations are very important for us because nobody likes to live in uncertainty. But to be honest, we are always living in an uncertainty and we cannot really forecast anything. So I believe that it will happen before. But, you know, okay. From what I understand and from what I'm reading and from what I'm knowing, I'm not sure that that will be the case. But I feel like the amount of money invested there and the, you know, make so many people and the player wants to make it a reality, it will become a reality.
Mm. What do you think needs to change to have that acceleration? You mentioned regulations, which is definitely a part. What else needs to change to have that acceleration?
I think that stakeholders need to understand and to analyze what are the weak parts, what are the rate limiting factors of the companies, and make sure that they invest in them as well. And not expecting the companies themselves to come up with a solution. So the companies, they have a lot of challenges to tackle as it is. So they don't need really to tackle also machinery and the growth factors and find, you know, ways to overcome. Instead of that, the stakeholders and the players in the industry need to say, okay, do you need growth factors? Let's invest in BioBetter-like companies, several of them, not only us, to make sure we have the solution. They need equipment. Let's invest in several big equipment companies will come and say, we will tackle that. Not expecting the startups as a startup to find, you know, the solution, or the satellite startups to find the solution by themselves and really push and give a push on that. This is the first thing. The second thing that I see very well in Israel, I don't know how it goes in other countries, but Israel decided to put alternative protein as one of their growth engine. So they bring a lot of grants and they invest a lot of thought and they help with the regulatory issues. And the prime minister come and the presidents of the state are coming and tasting the material themselves without even having a regulatory clearance. So I think this is also something that directs the population towards understanding the importance of that and investors understanding the importance of that. So I think you need to look at it more as a holistic solution instead of, you know, look at it as a company, certain company that needs to win the jack. Otherwise, it will not make a solution. If you believe it's a real problem, it's a real challenge. So you need to help the ecosystem. And by the end of the day, you know, perhaps BioBetter, perhaps another company will be able to come with a solution and, let's say, to win the market. But helping many of us at the beginning of the world, it's very important to make sure that you are, you know, spreading the risk and making sure that you will come with a solution.
So it's a more like a systematic approach and saying it's very important as well to invest into the supply chain. So know everything what has happened before and afterwards, and as well, like, who are the feeders, you know, the feeders to actually cultivated meat and to make sure that this whole network of that new industry is have enough cash actually to fuel that innovation.
It's not only cash. It also has to be a brain power. Mm. And for many other companies to give their capabilities in terms of scaling up, how to do it correctly, how to be cost efficient, the logistics. You know, there are so many aspects of like big meat companies that sell meat. They know so many details that no way that a new startup, even with abilities to scale up, can match these capabilities and experience. So, for example, in Israel, you have the Cultivated Meat Consortium. And I think more than the grants that they provide there, the concept that different players can work together, various cultivated meat companies. Nova is one of the organizers there, so they are like a meat, big meat producer in Israel. The growth media, the growth factors, they are all working together to find a solution. They are sharing information. Of course, every company needs, you know, to take care of its own IP and know-how, but in general, to help each other to advance this market. I think this is the only way that can, you know, what made the change with AI, that this company brought a tool and let a lot of people use it for free.
ChatGPT, you mean, yeah.
So
yeah.
Once you have ChatGPT and all the, and you know, I'm not talking about the people like myself that can use it for phrasing, you know, some sentences or, you know, to write an essay. I'm talking about people that know how to write a code and can do it with the use of ChatGPT. And once you give this tool available to everybody, you make this advancement. Mm. So I think that if the climate change is a real problem and we really want to solve it, either it's for meat or dairy or whatever, we want to make Cell Ag happen, we need to go for this concept. What can we do for free to help these companies succeed?
Mm, very nice, like a summary, I would say. Like, I just was searching for the word in a digital space because that's where I'm originally coming from. And we had this open, what is it called? Like open source technologies. And when you're just talking about it, I just saw the parallel of the digital revolution we had. At the beginning, you know, we had no infrastructure. So, you know, the internet was super slow. I don't know if you remember, like, you know, that internet, definitely you can't shop on that one. You know, we had an infrastructure problem. We had no services around. So it was very difficult to actually get a website online. And then all these software as a services came up, payment solutions came up, and the infrastructure of better internet came up, logistics providers and so on. So it took 20 years actually to create a whole structure in that place, how we actually know now e-commerce in that sense. And one of the players who has been also, you know, very open source about it and say like, hey, everyone should use our technology and enhance the whole digitalization part. I just thought it was a lot of parallel things you just said. And it was as well like joint investment of a lot of different governments as well as, you know, venture capital, etc. in that business. But as probably as a digital e-commerce side experienced that after 2 years of craziness after in COVID, it got quite, let's say, heated this year around that, or more cooled down more, I would say. And as well in the food tech, at least the startups I'm speaking to, they're also like saying, you know, the excitement at the beginning and this excitement of what it can all can bring has been cooled down a little bit the last 1 or 2 years.
But you know, this is our, you know, nature. I think this is human nature. You know, when you look at it, you fell in love with someone, you think that is the best, you think that this is the solution for your problems. And then after 1 year, 2 years, you get to know him and you say, oh, I see the disadvantages, you know, and you need to cope with that. But you only succeed if you understand that and still making the effort. I think that it's a maturity issue. And I think that maybe even if the e-commerce by itself, but if you look at, you know, for me, I'm 47. When I look at it, I see a lot of change from when I was young, 18, 20, waiting in the bank for 1 hour to talk with the clerk, to just corresponding by text messages and get everything I need on the spot. I think we can say that the digital world succeeded in some aspects. So I'm sure that there are, you know, branches that didn't succeed or will succeed maybe later or succeed because there was a COVID and then it cooled down. But by the end of the day, the solution was needed and it happened and nothing changed. But, you know, I think that you expressed it very well. You had so many stakeholders wanting it to happen. It was not, I don't think that there was a brain. It was like, you know.
No, it was a network of ideas and fulfilling a need in that sense.
You have like a, you know, nest of ants working together without really understanding what they're doing. And there is the outcome.
There's one queen.
Yeah, and you have the outcome. For them, you have that. So, you know, exactly here, I believe that it will happen also. I just wanted to say that, you know, for years they said the plant-based meat is not so tasty. And I've been to a conference right now in New York for the Future Food Tech. And I have to say that they walked their talk and what they gave us to eat was a plant-based food. And I have to say that some of the products were amazing. Very, very good tasting. I would never suspect that it's not a meat. Some of them were very, very tasty. And I think this is what happened. You know, you want to achieve something. You put all the effort. Some you succeed. Some you fail. Some will you make it better. I'm not sure that all the cultivated meat companies would become $1 trillion of revenues and the next supplier. But some of them will. Some of them will.
Interesting. Super interesting. So coming... Like now you said you're in the scaling up phase, etc. What kind of challenges you see ahead which you have to overcome as a biobetter in the next few years?
You catch me in a day that I feel like we have so many activities, so many things that we need to tackle and to make sure that happens in the regulatory aspect, in the different growth factors, in the scale, in the everything. So I said so much work to do, so minimal time, not so, you know, that we're now a lot of people, we are 40 people, but still, I wish we were like 10 more. And so, you know, I don't know. I think there are...
The typical growth pains.
Yes, I think, but I think we are in a very good place, to be honest with you. We are experiencing a lot of success. You know, every small biological advancement or experience good results for us, it's a huge success. Step by step, I think that we are making it. Sometimes I'm frustrated that it's not happening very, very fast, faster than it happened. But as my, you know, the CEO and my work husband says, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. We need to know how to maintain our, you know, energies all the time because it's not going to happen in one day.
Yeah, absolutely. I can feel you there. We also said that in e-commerce as well. It's a marathon with a lot of sprints.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So I think you raised like 60 million so far.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, do you have to raise in the near future or is it going to bring you a few years so far?
Years, I would not say years. But we have another year, which is for us, it's a you know, it's eternity to have a whole year. But we will have to raise money soon, hopefully.
And that's going to be Series B then? Or
I'm not sure if it will be a Series B or extended A. You know, by the end of the day, it's supply and demand, which will be the people with the money will decide what will be the case. We can want whatever we want, but they will decide what happens. So we are planning for a growth stage and hopefully we will raise enough money to build our next plan. But we are considering a lot of interesting alternatives. And I'm sure that in a few months from now, we will be in a position to say what is the strategy that you are going to pursue. But yes, definitely we are going to raise money soon again.
Okay, got it. So beside BioBetter, you actually founded several other companies or being the executive director beforehand. What was driving you?
I really like things that are being done. You know, I really like to have some a task and to you know, conquer it. All the time I'm coming, you know, waking up in the morning, asking myself, what are the tasks that I can complete today? So this, I think this is the, but I have to say that BioBetter is my favorite thing that I ever did in terms of food tech, what I'm doing. I'm really passionate about it. Of course, all the other things that I'm doing, I'm really passionate about them as well. But this is like my baby, you know.
Nice, very nice to hear. If you could improve one thing in the world, what would it be?
Yeah, I think that you asked me that, but I'm not really sure what I thought then. I think that I would like to put something in the everyone water to be more empathic to each other. You know, I think that this is the most important thing. I think that we so many times we forget to understand that we are all the same. We are fighting on resources, on, you know, on so many, and on even on opinions or religion. Or so I hope that we'll be able to be more empathic to each other.
That's nice. Is there any specific books or podcasts or resources that had a significant impact on your journey?
In the recent years, you know, I read a lot of books on, I think that's related to the other question that you asked, the former questions. Yeah, I think that Buddhism and the way, you know, not the religion, but the theory behind it, it's something that I'm really happy that I encountered. So this is something that I really...
Is that the book, The Wise Heart,
yeah,
by
yeah.
Jack Kornfield? Okay, that's about Buddhism.
Yes, I really...
Okay, why did that influence your life so much?
I think that one of the most important messages that he had for me that I remember very said, try to love the person you hate. First of all, love yourself, then love your people, you know, your kids, your partner, your family, your people, and then try to love the people you hate, the last circle. And I'm trying to practice it every day.
I'm not going to ask you how it it's going.
There are better days. There are, you know, yeah. I think I'm trying to look at love not as a feeling, but more as a principle. So this is something I am really trying to practice as a principle in my life. And this is something I think that Buddhism brought to my life, the wise heart brought to my life.
So now I have to ask, what's the difference between principle and emotion?
Emotion is something that comes and goes, you know, it doesn't have to be constant. But if you want trying to do it as a principle, it's something that is more constant in your life, that you can, you know, balance yourself all the time to go there. It doesn't matter if you feel sad or happy, if you're in a good mood, if you succeeded, if you failed. I think that working in our industry, it doesn't matter if it's a biotech or high tech or whatever. Every day is a battle with your ego by the end of the day. You know, if you succeed, if you failed, what it means to succeed, how you cope with failure. So I think if you practice love in general, then you love yourself when you fail, you love yourself when you succeed, you love yourself when you feel bad and when you made a mistake, when you didn't make a mistake. I think this is, you know, for me, this is the basic experience in life. Everything else is not the real thing. The real thing is to cope with yourself, to do something and then to regret it, and then how to cope with the regret, and not to do something and then to regret it, and how to cope with that. So this is the real experience in life. So that's what I'm trying to do without, you know, making all the activities take my intention so I will not think about it.
That's a nice, like we came from proteins to the principle of love. I really like it. It's
it's very
That's
important
true.
To what you feel and how you act in life.
That's so true. You are what you eat, yeah. No, amazing. Like I think that's fantastically to conclude that amazing conversation. I had like, I don't know, tons of other questions. So maybe we need to do another session one day for sure. How can people contact you if they would like to reach out to you?
They can contact me via LinkedIn or they can contact us from the website, biobetter.bio, whichever works. I'm here.
Fantastic. So thank you so much. I really enjoyed the conversation. It was great. I really learned a lot on that one. And I wish you all the best for BioBetter and, you know, surviving the growth pain.
Thank you so much. We'll do that with love. Lots of love.
Thank you for joining today's episode. You can find the show notes, background materials, and contact details of our guests on our website, sustainnow.ch. Follow and share our podcast on any platform available. Do you have a comment or interesting solution to take a deep dive? Please don't hesitate to go to our website, sustainnow.ch, and write us an email.